Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Becharos Daf Lamed Zayin. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's Shiur begins at the Mishnah on the upper part of Daf Lamed Zayin. Before we begin the limud, the study of the text inside, let us glance at the outside margin where we will notice the Nosei Mivneh heading, one of the features of the Shas Ozer, the Gemara that you see on your screen, the cornerstone of Gemara markings. We offer title headings and structural notes when needed. In this case, we have a title and structural note combined into one note. Under the Nosei Mivneh heading, you see a double underline feature. This is used in our case to highlight the expressions Bechor and Trefa. We've written here, Shnei Mikrim, two cases or incidents, Shenimkuru Lilukuchos, where either Bechor or Trefa meat was sold to customers, V'achar kach noda, and only later was it discovered that that is what was sold. So what do we do now? Now the Mishnah. Hashochet es HaBechor, a firstborn male animal was slaughtered, its meat was sold, v'noda shelo hereu, and it became known that it wasn't shown to a chacham, to a scholar, someone who rules concerning blemishes. So what we have is an improper thing took place, where Bechor meat was sold to customers without actually knowing that it was allowed to be sold. Ma she'ochlu ochlu. Whatever the customers ate, they ate. It's finished. V'yachsir lohem es hadomim. The seller has to refund the price. The need for refunding this, Rashi points out, is a knas, a type of fine, because he fed them something that was forbidden. Uma shelo achlu, that which they have not eaten, habosor yikover, the meat, this is bechor meat, shall be buried, v'yachsir lohem esadomim, and he is expected to return to them the money they paid. So in both cases, whether they ate the meat or did not eat the meat, they will be getting their money back. V'chein ha-shochet es ha-pora u-mochra. Likewise, someone slaughtered a cow and sold the meat. V'noda shi trefa, and it became known that that which he sold was trefa. Trefa is a type of organ imperfection that renders the animal forbidden to eat according to Torah law. Ma she'ochlu achlu, whatever they ate, they ate. Uma shelo achlu heim, that which they did not eat, yachziru loy es abosar, they shall return the uneaten meat to the vendor, v'hu yachzir lohem es adomen, and he shall refund their money. Mochru lo'ove kechavim, if the purchasers then turned around and sold the trefa meat to idol worshippers, oh, hitiluhu lekhavim, or they fed it to the dogs, Yishalmu loy deme trefa. They shall pay for him. Deme trefa is basically a fraction of the amount that they would have had to pay had it been regular kosher meat. And he will refund the balance. In other words, if they paid full price for the meat, which turned out to be trefa, so the amount that they will have to pay is, as we said, a fraction, and in so far as they're having paid full amount, so he'll give them a refund of that difference. Before going on in the Gemara, let us glance at the Nosei and on the outside margin, and we've called this a Nosei with an expression in parentheses, Hemshech, meaning a continuation of the information that we already introduced and learned. The Gemara will deal with this at greater length, and we've written Mechiras Dvorim, the sale of items, Shenoda Shem Asurim, that became known after the sale that they were forbidden things. And we'll speak about Bechor, firstborn male animals, Tevel, untithed produce, Yayin Nesech, wine that was handled by an idol worshipper. So if these things were sold, the Machzir Miktsas Hadomim Lelukuchos, the vendor is expected to provide a partial refund of the money that was paid. We open up the Gemara with a Tanaic source. After the Tanaic source, you'll notice a series of diamonds. We can introduce them now, even though we have yet to get to it. Under our Mivneh heading, you notice a diamond is featured, and these are kushios. These represent questions legabi hadvorim hamuzkorim li'el, regarding the items that at that point will have been mentioned already. We haven't learned the source yet. Loma loy machzir melukuchos es kol kaspom. Why is it that they don't get full refund? Me'achar shelohoyu lohem shum shoivi lamocher. These items had no value to the mocher. In other words, bechor, firstborn male animal, is something that is forbidden to benefit from. So the owner of that, the one who had that in his possession, didn't stand to gain any benefit from it whatsoever. If it was without a blemish, it would have had to just remain forever in that state, and he could have no benefit from it. Untithed produce is something that is forbidden to eat. It has no immediate value. Yayin Nesech is something that is forbidden to benefit from. So why is it that the vendor does not have to provide a full refund? That will be dealt with later in the Gemara. Now, we turn to the text. Tana Rabbanan. You see a frame around the next few lines. As you are probably quite familiar, this is a Tanaic source. All Tanaic sources in Gemara markings receive frames around them. Hamocher bosor lechavero v'nimtza bosor bechor. Meat was sold to a customer, and it was found to be firstborn male meat, animal meat. Peros v'nimtza tvolim. Fruits were sold, and they turned out to be untithed. Yayin v'nimtza yayin nesech, or wine was sold, and it turned out to be yayin nesech, forbidden wine. Ma she'ochlu ochlu v'yachsir lohem es adomim. Whatever they ate, and he has to provide a refund of money. Rashi adds here, the reason for his having to provide a refund is that whatever they ate, they had no pleasure from it once they find out what it was. The source goes on, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Dvorim shanefesh kotzebohen yachsir lohen esadomim, v'she'ein hanefesh kotzebohen yenake lohem esadomim. There are 2 points he makes. Dvorim shanefesh kotzebohen, things that a person finds disgusting, so when they receive a refund, it's a full refund, and things that are not found to be repulsive, then yenake lohem esadomim. That means he offers a partial refund. The Eluhain Dvorim Shanefesh Kotzebohen. The following are examples of things that a person will find repulsive. Nevelus, Utrefus, Shkotzem, Uramosim. Nevelus are animals that died. Trefos are animals that had some type of organ imperfection, rendering them unfit for eating. Legally unfit for eating. Shkotzem, Uramosim, different types of creatures, that short-legged, crawly, creeping crawly type creatures. Those, when a person finds out that that's what he was eating, he will be disgusted. V'elu hein dvarim she'ein hanefesh kotze bohen. B'choros tevolim v'ayin esech. And in this case, we said in the source, under Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar's name, that they will receive only partial refund. The Gemara now asks, Bechor, Yenake, we said here that the vendor gives offers a partial refund. The lame-ole, why is it that the customer cannot expect or demand full refund? By saying, my efsaditich, what loss have I caused you? By receiving the meat and eating it and not having anything to give back. So what? The vendor wasn't entitled to benefit from it in the first place. Loi tzricha kegon dezavin lei mimokoim muma. The case that was featured in this Tanaic source is a very special situation where the cut of meat that was sold to the customer was that part of the animal that happened to have had a blemish on it. The Omar Le, the seller, who happens to be a Kohen, because he's the one that originally received the Bechor, the Kohen can say, Ilav de achalte, had you not eaten that which I sold you, have a machzino le, I would have been able to show it, v'shori li nihale k'Rabbi Yehuda. And based on the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, that says that even after a bechor is slaughtered, it is able to be shown to a chacham, had you not eaten it, it might have been determined that I had full rights to sell it, because the chacham may have ruled that it was a formal blemish, and therefore your having eaten it prevents that fact from being established. Therefore, you don't deserve a full refund. The Gemara continues. Tevolim, we said regarding Tevolim in the source that Yinake. The unspoken question is, well, one second, Tevolim are forbidden fruits. They're untithed fruits. Why is it that the vendor only offers a partial refund and not a full refund? So the answer to that unasked question is because the vendor can say that, well, once it was discovered that it was untithed, I could have tithed it. Have misakhinino lehu v'achalno lehu. I could have tithed them and they would have been quite allowed to be eaten. So the vendor is saying, had you not eaten all of the tevolim, it's not correct to say that they had no value. I would have been able to tithe them. Yayin nesech. Once again, the question is, why is it that he offers only partial refund and not all the money? Because al yedei ta'arovas uch Reb Shimon ben Gamliel. The Yayin Nesech case was a Yayin Nesech that was mixed together with other regular wine. And as such, it was Yayin Nesech in a mixture with other wine. That's what was sold. That has value to the vendor. And you'll ask, well, how does that figure? Disnan, so we have a Tanaic source. In this Tanaic source, we will see Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, and we'll be focusing on him because that's the shita that we're based on. The source says, Yayin nesach shenofa labor, kulo osur bahano. Yayin nesach, that's the wine handled by an idol worshiper, fell into a pit, and there was other wine in the pit. Everything is forbidden. Reb Shimon Gamliel Omer, and as we said, this is the opinion we want to focus on. He says, "Imocher kulo leovdei kohavim chutz midmei yayin nesech shebo." So, if in this pit there was, let us say, there was a hundred gallons of kosher wine, and 1 gallon of yayin nesech fell in. So now you have 101 gallons of wine. what the owner can do is he can sell the 101 gallons of wine to an idol worshiper, charging him the rate of 100. In other words, this way it's clear that the Yayin Nesek did not create prohibition on all of the wine. Quite to the contrary, the rest of the wine remains something the owner, is allowed to benefit from, in the sense that he's able to sell it to an idol worshiper. However, the quantity of that mixture that is represented by the Yayin Nesek, that amount he is not allowed to benefit from. But in the meantime, we see that the reason in our case that the seller of the Yayin Nesek is entitled to keep part of the purchase money is because that which was sold was something that he was entitled to benefit from, based on the sheet of Shulam Liel, and understanding that which he had sold was not a bottle of pure Yayin Nesek, but it was a wine in which Yayin Nesek had been mixed. At this point, we conclude the perek and start the next perek of Maseches Bechoros, perek Al Elu Mumin. It is the sixth perek of the Masechta. Al Elu Mumin Shochten Es HaBechor. Actually, before we continue any further, let us glance at the topic heading, the Nosei, Mumin Shalem Shochten Es HaBechor. The different kinds of blemishes, if they are present, one is entitled to slaughter the Bechor, the firstborn male animal, that otherwise, without a formal blemish, it would be something forbidden to slaughter, as it has sanctity, and in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, it would have been brought as a korban. The Kohen who received this Bechor would have brought it as a korban. Nowadays, that there is no Beis HaMikdash without a mum, so it must be left around till it basically dies. You're not allowed to shear it nor work with it, and certainly not slaughter it. In the event, however, that it produces a blemish that is ruled upon by an expert, that will give a person license to slaughter it outside the Beis HaMikdash and benefit from its meat. So our Mishnah, our heading before we read the Mishnah, continues to say, HaGemara Tishal, the Gemara will ask, Me'achar Shekosuv Iver Upiseach, the Torah speaks about, as far as blemishes are concerned, an animal that's blind or lame. Minayin Lonu L'Rabois Kol Mine Mumim Nosafim. From where do we know to include many other kinds of blemishes rendering fit a slaughter of the Bechor. Rendering fit, we mean by giving license to the slaughtering of a Bechor. Our Gemara, actually, our Mishnah starts, Al Elu Mumin Shochten Es HaBechor. On the following types of blemishes, we can allow the slaughtering of a Bechor. Nifkimo Ozno Min Haschus Avolo Min Haor. The ear of the animal was notched in the schus, the cartilage area of the ear, and not in the fleshy part of the ear. Because if it becomes notched in the fleshy part of the ear, that's something that will heal. If it's notched in the cartilage part of the ear, that remains a notch, and hence it's called a mum. Nizdika. Alpha P Shalo Chosra, if it's cracked, even if there is no actual tissue missing. Nikva Melo Karshina, if it develops a hole that's the size of a Karshina. Karshina is a type of vegetation, a type of bean. Oi Shiyovsha, or it dried out. The ear, let us say, dried out. That would be a mum. Ezehu yavesha. What level of dryness is called dryness? We see two opinions in this Mishnah. One, kol shetinokei ve'eino motzia tipas dam. If it's dried out to the point that upon being pierced, not a drop of blood would emerge. Number two, Rabbi Yossi ben Hamshulin Omer, Yivesha Shitei Nifreches. It's so dry that it would crumble upon touch. You can see that this would be a much greater level of dryness. The Gemara asks, Amai, why are all of these different possibilities included under Mumin? Pisach v'iverksiv. The Torah, when it speaks about Mumin, it mentions lame and blind, not ears with holes in them. The Gemara answers, Ksiv nami kiye boy mum. That also appears in the Torah, which the Pasuk says it, when there will be a blemish. So a blemish includes things beyond Pisach and Iver. Question, V'eimo kiye boy mum klal, Pisach Iver prat. Could we not say that the Pasuk could be broken down into phrases and you'll end up having a general principle and a specific example? That's called klal uprat. And when you have a klal uprat, ein b'chlal ela mashe b'prat. When you have that type of setup with a general and then a specific, the rule is all that you can include is that which is taught in the specific. Pisach v'iver in midi achrin lo. That we're limited to lame animals and blind animals as being considered bali mumin and not something else. The Gemara says no, that we're not going to limit ourselves to that. Kol mumra, that expression, chozar v'kolal. So that the Pasuk is not stated in a specific and then general form, but rather it's a general, then a specific, and then again a repeat general expression. Hence, kol mumra is a general expression referring to all bad mumin. So as a result of that, I understand not to darshan it as a klal uprat, which would be very, very limiting. Let us read this again inside. Kol mumra chozar v'kolal klal uprat uklal iatadon elo kein haprat. There is now, as we said before, a new understanding of the posuk structure. You have a general, a specific, and a general. And when you have that, we say that you can include things that are like the prat. Ma prat mefurash mumin shebegoloi ve'enon chozrin. Just like the examples here in the pasuk are examples of things that are visible and they don't get better, they don't heal. So the prat of the pasuk was iver, blindness, or lameness. So those are things you can see, they're noticeable, and they are permanent. Af kol mumin shebegoloi. So too, any other type of blemish has to have those characteristics. It's called Shebegolui and the Enon Chosrin, and they don't get better. So if you have those characteristics, it's Mumin Shebegolui and it's Enon Chosrin, that would be a blemish that you can rely upon for slaughtering the Bechor outside the Beis HaMikdash. Question, V'eimo Mahaprat Mufurosh Mumin Shebegoloi Ubotel Mimalachto V'eino Chozer. Here's a new factor called Botel Mimalachto. Just like Pisech and Iver are examples of something that are extraneous, or external, and they don't get better, but also Botel Mimalachto, they no longer perform their original function. In other words, the eye that's blinded is Botel Mimalachto, it's Botel from Lechesria, doesn't see anymore. The lame animal will no longer be able to walk normally. Af kol mumin shebegoloi ubutal mimalachto v'eino chozer. So too, when we make our general rule about mumin, they would have to have this additional characteristic as well. That's botel mimalachtoi. Alomatnan, so why do we have a teaching that says nifkimo oznoi min ha chaschus avol lo min ha'or? If the ear is notched at the point of the cartilage and not at the point of the flesh, So that would be a mum. The question here is, an animal like that is not, where's the bitul mumlachto? The animal still is able to hear. So the Gemara answers, kol mumra ribui hu. This is now a new approach to the pasuk. The pasuk is not like we thought, klal prat uklal, which had some limiting factors to it, as we just suggested, it has to also be bottom lachta. But no, it says the approach to this pasuk is called a miut, is called a riboy miut veriboy. Well, if, and that's much more inclusive. Well, ihachi, if you're telling me that we are dealing with a type of scriptural structure that's very inclusive, then mumin shebeseser nami, and even hidden blemishes, the non-obvious blemishes, should also constitute a blemish for allowing the slaughtering of the bechor. But yet we find in the sources not so. Aloma tanan. So why is it taught? This is a source dealing with issues of teeth of animals, and this is a point we've seen in past dapim. It says, Chutin hachitzenis shenif gimu v'shenigmimu v'apnimios shenekru. Chutin is a reference to the teeth of an animal. So the outer teeth that were nif gimu, they were notched, or they were nigmimu, they were cracked. Or the pnimios, the inner teeth, which were uprooted, they were extracted. Then you have a mum problem. Nekru in nifkimu v'nigmimu lo. Only if they've been extracted is there a problem, but if they've simply been notched or cracked, so they don't constitute, when it happens to the pnimios, they don't constitute a mum. But one second, if you're telling me that kol mum ra is a riboy, is inclusive, so why don't we include these cases as well? The Gemara answers, bo'ina mum ra v'leka. It has to be a mum ra. And the Rashi adds to that, that elo begolui sheminavlo. It has to be a type of a blemish that's visible and also renders it disgusting. Well, ihachi, if now you're placing emphasis on mum ra, mum over nami. So if it's a transitory mum, it should also be grounds for allowing the redemption. Aloma tanan, so why has it been taught? The lo min ha'or. Lo min ha'or was a reference to the ear that developed a hole in it. And we said that only if it's a notch that's in it, it's only if it's in the area of the chaschus, which is the cartilage area, not in the area of the fleshy part. Well, if you're telling us that mum raw. That we're darshaning kol mumra to be inclusive, so then why in this case do we not include the case of the hole in the ear, even if it happens to be in the or? So the Gemara answers, and we have a little one over here because this is in anticipation of a number two that's quite a few lines later. Mum over savara hu, the inability to shecht based on a transitory mum is a svara. Hashta mifrik lo parkinon iluya mishchat shechtinon iluya. Regarding a mum over, we know that you cannot redeem a sacrifice based on the presence of a transitory mum. So you can't even redeem an animal based on a transitory mum. Mishchat shachtina niluya. Would you think that you could shecht outside the Beis HaMikdash over such a thing? Once again, if for a mum over you can't redeem an animal, then you certainly couldn't take the more drastic step of shechting the animal. we have a bracketed section. You can see the length of this section by looking at the vertical dash dotted line. That takes you to another line later in the Gemara, which is labeled with a number 2 in it. And there we've written, Iboy Esema, and if you like, if you prefer, we can answer. Regarding the issue of, we asked before if we have a Riboy in the Pasuk, and we're saying the Pasuk says, Kol Mum Ra, so the question is, why are we not including the case of Nifgimu and Nigmu when it came to the teeth? So, approach number 2 says, Im Kain, if you're going to include all of these things, then Pisech V'Iver Mayahani, then what benefit do the examples of the Torah says about Mumin, namely Pisech and Iver, what benefit are they? Once again, if I'm coming to include everything, as was suggested on the top of the page, then what's being highlighted by the example of Pisech o Iver? When I'm saying, according to the Havamina, when I'm saying that we'll include everything, even things that are not like Pisech and Iver. Therefore, we understand from this, from the presence of Pisech and Iver in the Pasuk, that we're not going to include everything, even the case of the inner teeth that were merely cracked. That, I understand, does not constitute a mum, because it's so far away, it's so different than what Pisech v'Iver represented. We mentioned before that we had a bracketed section. There's a note on the inside margin, accompanied by a star. It says, Sograim l'shem dilug. The brackets here are for skipping purposes. Kedei l'lmod miyad es atshuva shnia b'resef, so that we can learn the second answer immediately in continuity. B'socham, within the bracketed section, muva hamoker the ein poidim al smach mum over. We will see the source for that which we mentioned before, that we don't redeem based on a transitory mum. Desanya. We have a pasuk that says, the im kol behemo tameo asher lo yakrivu mimeno la korbon lashem. B'balei mumin sheniftu hakosuv medaber. This pasuk is referring to blemished animals that had originally been dedicated as sacrifices that have been redeemed. So these are described as animals that cannot be offered as sacrifices. Ata oimer b'balei mumin sheniftu. Are you telling me that this pasuk that opens up with the words in Kol Behemot Tameah is referring to blemished animals that were redeemed? Oy eino elo b'behemot tameah mamish. Maybe it's referring to what is called literally a behemot tameah, something like all those animals that are of an unkosher variety, like pigs and horses and camels and donkeys. How do you know to say that this pasuk vayikra Perek Chav Zayin Posuk Yud Aleph is referring to blemished sacrifices that have been redeemed? Well, the answer to that is Kishu Omer, when it says elsewhere in Vayikra Perek Chav Zayin Posuk Chav Zayin V'im B'Vehemo HaTemeo Hare Behemo Temeo Amur, that is a totally separate posuk. That posuk deals with the Behemo Temeo. Ha Behemoth may have the horses and pigs, etc. Ha mo ani mekayim asher lo yakrivu mimeno korban mashem. So what am I to do with posuk yud aleph? Heve omer ze balei mumin shiniftu. It therefore refers to that which we opened up with, that which we said originally, that it's referring to animals originally dedicated as sacrifices that became blemished and were redeemed. Now we get to the main point of this source, the main reason for bringing the source in. Yochol yiftu al mum over? Could it be that redemption can be done for even a transitory mum?
Talmud Lomar Asher Lo Yakrivu Mimeno Korban Lashem. From this we learn She'eno Krevo Kol Iker, something that cannot be offered at all. Yosisazu, to the exclusion of this, the Mum Over case, She'eno Krevo Hayom Elo Lemohar. It may not be offered today, but when the Mum disappears, when the blemish passes away, then it will be able to be offered then, tomorrow. So what have we done in the bracketed section? We brought in the basis or the background for the Svara that was mentioned originally. Why is it that we don't include even a Mum Over as being grounds for slaughtering a Bechor? And as we said, it was a Svara. Mind you, you can't even redeem an animal with a Mum Over, let alone be able to shecht it outside the base Hamikdash. Iboy Seima, another approach, and we had learned this earlier, another approach as to why we don't include just everything. We said regarding the inner teeth, why don't we include? We mentioned that if the inner teeth are just nifgemu or nigmemu, so they're not called mumra. But if we say that mumra is our standard, so then why not include a mum over as well? So we said, well, if that be the case, then what benefit will pisach and iver have had for us? Im kain, pisach viver mai ahani. And Rashi comments on this and says, Im Kain, the fourth line from the top, the Al Mum Oiver Nami Nishchat, if it were so that even for a transitory Mum, a Bechor could be slaughtered, Piseach Viver Maya Hani Le Demash Mumun Kivuin Velo Ovrim. The detailed or the spelled out Mumun, the lame and the blind, are Mashma, they imply only permanent type Mumun. So we have to gain some benefit from them, even though it's true we don't limit ourselves to Pesach and Iver. However, we can't be so inclusive so as to include even transitory Mumin, because otherwise, of what significance would citing Pesach and Iver have had for us? We continue in the Gemara. Nistika, Afal pi shelo chosra, a crack, even if no actual tissue matter is missing. That would constitute a mum. Tanu Rabbanan, hasedek kol shehu. The size of the sedek could be even any small amount. Hapegima bein bidei odom, bein bidei shamayim. Pegima, a notch, whether it's human imposed or it was born with it. Bidei shamayim, heavenly imposed or born with it. So in this little source, there seems to be a distinction made between sedek and pegima. So one could imply or infer from this, mechlal de sedek bidei shamayim lo. Should we imply from here that the issue of something happening from birth is relevant only with regard to pegima and not with regard to the sedek? Not that can't be. Elo hochi kotoni. Hasedek kol shehu. As far as dimensions of sedek, even if it's kol shehu, very small in size. V'hasedek v'hapegima bein bidei shamayim bein bidei odom. With regard to cracks and notches, whether they be heavenly inflicted or human inflicted. V'kama shiur pegima. Now this source doesn't tell us about the dimensions associated with pegima. It only mentions sedek. So here we say, how much is the size of the pegima? Kedei shetachgor bo tziporen. Enough for it to be, for a fingernail running along it to be caught in that notch. Nikva melo kashina. We also mentioned if a hole in the ear the size of a karshina developed, that would be a mum. Tonu Rabbanan, kamo nikivas ha'oizen. So the first opinion is malo karshina. Rabbi Yosi Bar Yehuda Omer, he represents a second opinion on the Nekiva Sa'ozen. He says, Bich Adosha. Adosha is often translated as a lentil. V'ezohi Yevesha. What about issues of dryness level? So the first opinion on the issue of Yevesha says, She'im tinoke ve'eno motzio tipas dam. If the ear would be pierced at that point and no blood would emerge. Rabbi Yossi ben Hamshulin Omer, a second opinion on this, says, Yevesha kadesh tehei nifreches, that it's so dry that it would crumble at touch. Tana. There's a brief Taneg source that's vague. It says, Kroivin divrayan liois shovin. These two opinions are very close to being equal, to being like one another. So the Gemara asks, Divrei and Daman, which two opinions are said to be very close to one another in terms of levels? E lemo de tano kamo v'Rabbi Yossi ben Hamshulim, the two opinions that address the issue of dryness. Well, tuvo iko, there's a big difference between them. A piercing that doesn't result in any blood flow is not anywhere near the dryness level of something that upon touch would crumble. Elo, when this Brisa says that the two descriptions, the two levels are close to one another, it's referring to the Resha. Elo detana kamo v'Rebbe Yossi bar Yehuda. The issue of Nekiva Sa'ozen, the hole in the ear, the two opinions that we saw are close to one another. In other words, the Karshina that was mentioned by the Tanakhama is just a little bit bigger than the Adosha that was mentioned by Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda. But even though there's slight difference, it still is accurate to say that Kroivin Divrei Leo Shavan, they are close to one another. Now, we're dealing with holes in ears. On the outside margin, we have a Nosea topic heading, Shiurei Nekev Oizen. We're going to discuss the issue of holes in ears, and these Shirim L'maskonas HaGemara, after we present a contradiction, but when we get to the end, we will discover that there are actually two levels. There's a Shiur Lifsoil that renders it unfit to be offered, but not necessarily large enough for us to allow slaughtering of it. And hence there's another shiur, Lishchot Olov Bachutz, that allows us to slaughter it outside the Beis HaMikdash. So in the meantime, we're not really aware of these two levels, so this leads us to a question in the Gemara. The Gemara focuses on the shiur of Ka'adosha, and we mentioned that the small of the two shirim was kadosha, so we're focusing on that and saying kadosha in botzer mikadosha loi, that if it's an adosha in size, that would be a mum, but less than an adosha in size would not be considered a mum. Is that really so? Veramini, we raise a contradiction from the following Tanaic source. You can see we have a long question marking to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. You see a kufitz encircled with a vertical descending dashed line, indicating that all of these lines comprise the kasha. This source will talk about an Eved Ivri. This is a Jew who is sold into servitude. Generally speaking, they will work for 6 years and then go free. There are situations where a Eved Ivri, this servant, Jewish servant, wants to remain with the household into which he was sold. In such a case, the Torah provides for him remaining till the Yovel year, till the 50th year of the Yovel cycle. But he has his ear pierced or bored. And when he does that, he then stays until the Yovel. In the course of this discussion, we will see there are different tools that are mentioned for the purpose of accomplishing the boring. One of them is a machat, a needle. And we will be told that if an Eved Ivri happened to be a Kohen, so then he will not have his ear bored, because by having one's ear bored, that will make him into a Baal Mum, and a Kohen has to be available for service in the Beis HaMikdash, and if he is a blemished Kohen, he won't be able to fulfill that.
So we see from this source that the hole, the size of a machat, a needle point hole, would create a mum. Now, a machat is much smaller than a adosha. So how can you tell me that less, that only b'chadosha do you create a mum, and less than that you don't, when we see even a needle point creates a mum? That will be the question. And to that, the Gemara will answer, like we mentioned before, that there really are two standards. One is to render it unfit as a korban, and the other is to enable it to be slaughtered outside the Beis HaMikdash. Let us see the question. Viromini. Marzea. This is the name of a tool that an Eved Ivri has his ear pierced with. And that's featured in the Torah itself. Ein li ela marzea. Well, that's the only thing I would think is able to be used for boring the ear. Minai l'rabois, from where do I know to include the following utensils? And we're not going to translate each one of them, but realize they're all different kinds of utensils that are sharp, pointed, and can make holes. Hasoil, vasira, vamachat, vamikdach, vehamachtev. Well, how do I know to include all of those other devices as being suitable for making the hole in the ear of the Eved Ivri that wants to stay till the Yovel? Talmud Lomar, v'lo kachto. It says, v'lo kachto in the Pasuk. The rabbis call davar shenilkach b'yad. This comes to include any utensil that you can pick up by hand. Rebbe Omer, Marzea. He also darshans the word Marzea. Ma martzim yuchad shel mateches, just like your standard martzea is a vessel, a utensil made of metal, af kol shel mateches. So too, any device that you use for boring the ear must be made of metal. There's a machlokus between Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, and Rebbe in how extensive is our inclusion of other vessels, but that is not the focus of our discussion right now. We continue. V'katoni seifa, Omer Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar tells us, Yudin b'Rebbe, the great Yudin, hayadoresh, k'shein roitzin, ein roitzin ela b'milas. When the boring takes place, at what point in the ear does it take place? So this Yudin Varebi says it takes place in the milas. The milas would be the fleshy part of the ear. V'chachomim onrim, the chachomim say, ein eved ivri kohen nirtza, an eved ivri who is a kohen does not go through the ritzia process, this boring of the ear, mipnei shenase baal mum. It would make him, if he would go through it, it would make him into a blemished individual. And if we would accept Yudin Berebi's approach that the boring took place in the fleshy part, like the earlobe, then hech eved ivri koy nasib al mum ha'ein rotsin ella begova shalotin. To go over this again, if, like Yudin Berebi said, so why would it be that kohanim would become a baal mum with that? That it grows back, it's not a permanent type hole. Rather, the ritzia takes place only be goiva shalos, and that would be in the upper part of the ear where there's cartilage. What do we see from this whole discussion? We see that the hole that would have made a kohen into a baal mum is a hole made with, amongst other things, a machat. And a machat is much less than an adosha. So we see from this that mumim can occur even with something less than an adosha in size. Omar Rav Chana Bar Ketina lo kashya. Rav Chana says there is no contradiction. Kan lishchot, kan lifsol. In order to be allowed to go so far as to slaughter the animal, the bechor, outside the Beis HaMikdash, it would have to have an adosha size hole. However,
to render it unfit to be offered as a sacrifice, even the smaller hole would be enough, even the size of a machat. My karshino, we saw in the sources above that we saw two opinions on the size of the hole. One was bichta adosha, and one was karshino. So adosha is well known what that is. Karshino, though, less known. So the Gemara is asking, what is a karshino? Omar of Shravya, hinda. And we have to just accept that the Gemara understood what hinda was. That's how they understood it. So they, once upon hearing hinda, they knew then what karshino was. Ba mine Rav Hoshaya mirav Huna Rabo. Rav Hoshaya asks of the great Rav Huna, karshino, hanichneses v'yotze o karshino oyho imedes. This size, defined by karshina, is it a hole in which a karshina could freely pass to and fro? That's what is meant by the term nichneses v'yotzes. In other words, the hole is a bit larger than the karshina itself. Or is it the size of a karshina, it's a karshina sized hole whereby the karshina would be wedged into this, so it's like exactly the size of the karshina, thereby if a karshina, an actual karshina, was put into such a hole, it would stay there, it would be snug in there. So the question then is, the size of this nekev that we call karshina, is it nifneses v'yotzes, or is it a karshina hoimedes, which would mean it's a smaller, tighter hole? Omar lo. So the question was asked of Rav Huna Rabba. He answers, zu lo shomati, kayotse bo shomati. I didn't hear an answer specifically to your question. However, I heard something along these lines. Now, what it is that he heard along these lines will not be readily apparent. That will come up only at the end of the upcoming discussion. Before we go any further, let us glance at the outside margin where we have a number of notes that accompany this sugya. And we can point out that this Gemara, this piece of Gemara, will extend virtually till the Mishnah on Daf Lamed Ches Omen Aleph, meaning till almost the bottom of that page. In the context of our current type recordings, which we're doing under the heading of Daf Yomi, we won't be able to complete the entire sugya. We will have to go basically till the upper part of Lamed Ches for this particular shiur, but we would be doing a great disservice if we gave you the feeling that the sugya ended where we'll be ending today's shiur. Therefore, just a few moments of attention paid to the structure of this sugya will be of great benefit for us, Amir Tzashem, when we pick up with the next shiur. So in the meantime, let us glance at the outside margin under the nosei. This we've learned already, Sheila. We're going to raise a question. Shiur nekev ba'ozen, the size of the hole in an ear of a bechor, karshina. We said it's the size of a karshina. Ha'im hu karshina nichneses v'yotzes? Is it a size hole where a karshina grain or bean could freely go in and out of the hole? Oy karshina ho'imedes ba'nekev, or is it a type of hole that the karshina would be wedged in and stay put in the hole, not fall out? So now we have he'ora. Let's say a general note. Ha'gemora eino mitaretzes she'lo hanal. The Gemara won't answer this question directly. Yeshiros means in a direct fashion. Elo mevio noisei acher. The Gemara will, however, bring another topic in, shekoruch b'medidas shiurim, that is understood through understood as dealing with different measurements. Uboy muzkar shiur shel mikdach v'chisumo. In the course of this Gemara, which we'll see on Lamed Ches Amud Aleph, the size of a hole that's mentioned is the size of a drill. A mikdach is a drill, and chisumo is the surrounding area that would keep the drill bit, let's say, wedged in place. So that the size of the hole is the size of the drill bit plus the area that otherwise would have kept it in place. Dehainu yoytze v'nichnas. That, then, what are we describing? We're describing a hole that would be, that the item would be able to enter and exit freely, namely the drill bit. Shi'ur zu muva. This shi'ur, this size, is brought on Bilamad Chesom Aleph. Kehesber Harishon is brought as a first explanation. Umesumon, and you'll see it's on Lamed Ches, it appears in a crown shape. Lahar Ois, and it's brought in as an explanation to show the Beis Shammai Beis Hillel Einam Omrim Oise Dovar. Biyachis L'shiur Nekev B'gugolas. The Gemara will be introducing another topic in the flow of this discussion, dealing with a hole in a skull, in a human skull. A human skull, if it were totally intact, would create tumas oihel. However, if there's a hole in the skull, like is the case with a spine, which if complete would create tumas oihel, but if some vertebrae are missing, it would no longer be metameh oihel. So dealing with the hole in the skull that would result in it being declared as tohor, not metame ba'oil, this issue comes up about the size of the drill bit and the surrounding area. In the course of that discussion, it will become apparent or seemingly apparent that Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel say the same thing. So in order to create a distinction between the two opinions, the description of the drill bit will be given as we said. That's the size of the drill bit, the mach v'chisumo, and the surrounding area. B'sof lamed chesam al aleph, and this is, it's very important for us to point out ahead of time this, that at the end of lamed chesam al aleph, yuva oid hezber muva Lahar ois achiluk beineim ukemo kain mesumon, with the crown. There will be another hesber given to show the distinction between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel that will be marked off with this crown. So the crown marking will be a sign of answers dealing with the question of it, the appearance of Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel be seemingly saying the same thing. This will become much clearer as we go on in the Gemara. We should take note of the fact that we have a long point coming up. You can see there's a nun encircled to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. This long point continues till the upper part of Lamed Ches Amud Aleph. Technically speaking, this long point marking could have been used all the way down Lamed Ches Amud Aleph till practically the Mishnah, and that is because this whole Gemara is now getting a bit off the topic. We were dealing with the issue of hole in ear, size of hole in ear. The Gemara says, well, I didn't hear a direct answer about the size. When we speak about the karshina, is it nichneses v'yoytzes or is it be'oimedes? But I heard something similar to that regarding a different area of holes, in this case holes in skulls. So once we got off the point of zulo shamati regarding the karshina itself, we're now going to be onto another area of learning, and that's why we have this long point marking, and the truth is that this really lasts till the Mishnah on Lamed Ches Amud Aleph. But for convention's sake, we didn't draw the long point quite that long, but nevertheless, it's long enough for us to say that we're going to now focus on a particular point for a while. So the Gemara had said that the issue of Yotze V'Nichnas or Oimedes by the Karshino, that I didn't see. Omar Loi, I'm reading that line again, Zu Lo Shamati, Kayotze Bo Shamati. But something similar we have learned. Disnan. We have a Tanaic source that deals with Tumas Oyel of a mace. That's the Tuma, the ritual impurity that is generated by a corpse. And when we speak about a corpse, even if it's not a complete corpse, still it can generate Tumas Oyel. And the source says, HaShedra VaGulgolos SheChosru. A Shedra is a spine, Gulgolos a skull, that are missing. Those will create Tumas Oyel. V'kamotei chisaron b'shedra v'lo yehei metame b'oyel. How much of the spine must be missing in order for there to be no Tumas Oyel? It would be basically a bunch of bones, and bones are metame only upon contact, not upon being in the same room with them. That's unless you're dealing with special bones like a complete skull or a complete spine, or there's some other exceptions. In the meantime, though, the Bryce is asking how much lacking in the Shedra would be to rescind the Tumas Oyel. Beishamai Omrim Shtei Chulios Ubeishil Omrim Chulio Achas. With regard to a spine, Beishamai says that it won't mitame ba'oyel if it's missing two vertebrae, and Beishil says even if it's missing one vertebrae. Ubogogoles, with regard to a skull. Now we've dashed underline Gogoles because this is more of our focus as we go on. Beishamir Omrim Kimlo Mikdach, a hole the size of a mikdach is a drill. And Beishilol Omrim Kidei Shinotel Min Hachai Vyomus. That amount of skull that if it were removed from a living creature, it would die. The Yosef Rav Chisda v'kama be'elei, Rav Chisda was seated and was asking, Kedei shinotel minachai v'yomus b'kama. How much is that? That shiur. This is, we can call the Beis Hillel shiur. How much is that? Omer lei Rav Tachlifa bar av vudimi, hochi Omer Shmuel. Thusly Shmuel said, Kesela. Now, we have a bracketed section. It's a few lines. The bracket length indicator shows you that by the time you get to the first wide line at the end, the bracket closes. V'omar lei, and Rav Chisda, hearing this, responds and says, Asisa divrei beis shamai, v'divrei beis hillel, echad. You've made them to be almost one in the same. In other words, if it's so that Beis Hillel's shiur of Kadeshi Notel Minachai Vyomus really means Kesela. Sela is the size of a coin, a certain type of coin. So then you're making the shiur of Beis Shammai, who said Melo Mikdach, the same as Beis Hillel, who speaks about a Sela. Where do we see them being one in the same? So that's in the upcoming source. But before we get to that, we have a brief bracketed section that we must go over. We saw Rav Tachlifa quote Shmuel. The question is, or the issue here in the brackets is, Shmuel's comment, was it something that he said as a Tanaic source, or was it something that he said without having a Tanaic source, but rather as an Amora would say something? And that's what the brackets deals with. V'itma Rav Safra. V'itma Rav Safra Omar, Shmaitza Omar Lei. Rav Tachlifa, in quoting Shmuel, is quoting Shmuel as something that was taught as an Amora statement. Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda Omar, Masnisa Omar Lei. According to Shmuel Bar Yehuda, Shmuel was reciting a Tanaic source. The Simonech, in order to remember who says what, remember the following. Toni Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda. So that here we have Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda, who is saying that Rav's teaching, that Shmuel's teaching was based on a Tanaic source. He himself is an author or a collector of Tanaic sources, as the expression Tani Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda indicates. This is an expression that introduces Tanaic sources that come from the yeshiva of Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda. So we see that he is the one that says that Shmuel's teaching was of Tanaic origin. So to take accounting of what we have so far, when dealing with the hole in the gugolas that would render it incapable of creating tumas oyel, we saw machlokis, a seeming machlokis, Beisham Beis Hillel, Beisham is saying it's kimlo mikdach, and Beis Hillel saying it's kadesh yinoto min achai viyomus. Then we ask, what does kadesh yinoto min achai viyomus mean? So it means kisela. So then if you want to reduce to lowest denominator what Beis Hillel was saying, he was saying that the shear of the whole gugolas is kisela, which is a type of coin. Beis Shammai said it's kamalo mikdach. Well, now the Amar Lei, the Gemara continues on the end of the first wide line. He says the Amar Lei Rav Chisda says im kain. If you're telling me that Beis Hillel is kisela, then asiso divrei Beis Shammai v'divrei Beis Hillel echad. Then you're making Beis Shammai, who spoke about a maloi mikdach, the same as Beis Hillel, who said Kisela. And in one Tanaic source, obviously you can't have the two saying the same thing. They wouldn't both appear in the source. Now, where do we see this, that a malo mikdach and a seller are one and the same? Disnan, we have the following Tanaic source. This source continues, as you can see from the frame, it continues to the upper part of Lamed Ches Omer Aleph. Now, this source deals with a new topic. The issue here is Tumas Meis, where you have a corpse in one room and there's a dividing wall and something that has to be tor in the other room. Say a person that wants to remain tor is in the other room. A wall dividing between the two. This source tells us that if there is a, we'll call it a hole in the wall, without any pun intentions, so the hole would be a conduit or a way for the tumah to travel from the room where the corpse is to the neighboring room where there is a kohen, or where there is something that has to remain tahar. Will the tumah from the corpse pass through the hole and metama the kohen or the truma, whatever that there is that we are interested in its tumah or its tahara? So Rav Chisda got finished telling us that if you say that the shear of Beis Hillel of Kadesh Yinoto Min Achai V'Yomus is a Sela, then you're making Beis Shammai, who spoke about a Melo Mikdach, the same as Beis Hillel. That's Rav Chisda's Kashin. By the way, you can see we have a long question marking for this, starting here on the right hand, to the immediate right hand side of the Gemara text. A kuf appears that's encircled with a vertical dashed line, which takes you to the top line of Lamed Ches Omer Aleph. In this source that we're about to read, we have a very convenient marking for you. The bottom line, you notice there is dashed on the line Mikdach Godol and Kisela Niroinis. On that line, these two terms are taught as representing the same size. So in this source, you see that Mikdach Godol and Sela Niroinis are really are identical. If, as we were saying just before, Mikdach is associated with Beis Shammai in the case of the Gulgoles, and you could see the Gulgoles source where we had dashed underlined Gulgoles a little further up. In that source, Beis Shammai had been underlined, and you saw him make reference to the Mikdach, and you see Beis Hillel in that same source say Kadesh Yinoto Min Achai V'Yomus, which Rav Tachlifa quoted Shmuel saying that's a Sela. And in this source at the bottom line, you see Mikdach and Sela equaling one another. So how could that possibly be when if that be the case, then Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel would be saying the same thing. Now the Gemara. We're starting from the Kasha. The Amar Lei, Rav Chisda responds to after hearing from Rav Tachlifa bar Avudimi that Kadesh Yinoto Min Achai V'Yomus is Kisela, so V'Yomar Lei, Rav Chisda then says in Cain, if you're setting up Beis Hillel as saying Kisela, then Asisa Divrei Beis Shammai V'Divrei Beis Hillel Echad, you're making them one and the same. This not, as is illustrated in the following source, Mo'or Shelo Na'aseh B'Dei Odom,
more we'll call an opening, a window, a hole between two rooms. In one room there is a corpse, in the other room there is things that have to that are tohar. So if it's a mor that happened without a person making the hole, it could be an earth tremor caused the wall to crumble a bit. Shi'uro melo egroif godol. It's the size of a large fist. Vizeu egroifoi shel ben avatiach. There was a person who was known to be a corpulent, obese, large human being whose fist was this size, the size of that we just mentioned, melo egrov godol. So if you want to know what that was, so if you happen to have known ben avtiach, you would know what this size is. Omer Rabbi Yosi, v'yeshno kerosh godol shel odom. It happens to be the size of a large human head. Now there's another kind of hole that may be made. Nase bidei odom. A mor, this opening between two rooms that was made by human intervention. Shi'aruhu kimlo miktach godol shelishka. They estimate it to be the size, or they calculated, describe it as having the size of this thing called malo miktach godol shelishka. It has to do with some type of drill size. Shu kapunyon shel hoitaki, which is the same size as that type of coin, the Italian punyon. Ukisela nironis, or like the Nero Sela. Sela is a type of coin. So we have, so far, you've got describing the Mo'or Hanasi B'dei Odom as having the size of a Mikdach Godol, which is the same size as a Sela nironis. The Yeshno Kimlo Nekev Shel Oil. And it happens to be the same size as a that's the hole made by an oil. The Rashi at the top says, "Kmelo nekev shalol sheoisin boy nekev, v'toiken boy yosed likshor rutsuos ha'oil." The oil is a yoke that is attached to an animal to which other utensils are attached. For our purposes, all we have to realize is that the yoke has a hole. As we said, straps are threaded through this hole, and it has this particularly known size. For our purposes, though, we don't have to get involved with all of the details. What we do have to see is a focus on that which we dashed underlined, the terms Mikdach Godol and Sela Nironis. We already associated above Mikdach Godol with Beis Shammai. We associated the Sela Nironis with Beis Hillel. And if all of this be true, then we won't understand how was Hillel Beis Shammai seemingly arguing in the case of the hole in the Golgolis? Well, Ishtik, Rav Tachlifa remained silent, because Rav Tich, this is a question that was directed at what he reported. He was the one that gave us information as to what Beis Hillel meant when he said, Kedeshi notam enachai v'yomus. And he is the one that said that Beis Hillel represented the shiur of Kisela. And that then makes Beis Hillel like Beis Shammai. The Omar Le Rav Chista, Rav Chista then, who was troubled by all of this, he pipes up and says, and notice we've labeled him with a crown marking, and also we're calling him number one. Lower down on the page, Rav Papa appears with a number two to the immediate right hand side of the Gemara text. Both Rav Chista and Rav Papa are coming to address the issue of Beis Shammai v'Hillel, how they really are not one in the same. The Amalei Rav Chista, Shema Mikdach v'Chisumo Shaninu. Maybe when Beis Shammai mentioned Mikdach, it wasn't just the size of a Mikdach, of the hole that a drill would make, but it's the size of the hole plus a bit of area in addition to that. In other words, it would be what we said earlier would be considered something that would be yoytze v'nichnas. Now, this really is the main point of having brought this discussion in the first place. This, you'll notice we have a little arrow indicating to look at Lamed Zayin Beis, and if you skim up from the bottom, you'll notice an arrow there, about a quarter of the web from the bottom, with a Lamed Ches Omed Aleph note next to it, above it, pointing to the expression Kayotze Bo Shamati.
Because when we say over here, Mikdach v'chisumo, we are describing something that we call Yotze v'nichnas. This is what we were looking for when we said, when dealing with the Karshina, how large is the Karshina hole? And we said, well, we don't have an answer to that issue of is it Yotze v'nichnas or Ho'imedes. But in a similar type discussion, discussing holes in a different context, we see that the hole is described as Mikdach v'chisumo, which is another example, which is an example of something that is Yotze v'nichnas. So upon hearing Rav Chisdo's point, Rav Tachlifa, who was silent, now speaks up and says, V'omar le Rav Tachlifa, lo temo shemo, don't say maybe this is the explanation of Beis Shammai, ela vadai mikdach v'chisumo. It definitely means that. Oh, so now if you say it means mikdach v'chisumo, that is a different size than the Sela that Beis Hillel spoke about. And as Rashi says, Mikdach v'chisumo is more than a Sela. So that skull, according to Beis Shammai, will continue to be metameh be'oyel until the hole is pretty large, relatively speaking. Beis Hillel saying that even if the hole is smaller in size, the skull will no longer generate Tumas Oihel. V'tzorech litolois ole kichizkia avi akish. Tosis explains this expression at the top. Pirush tzorech ato litzroch de liyashev hadavar. You have to work out this issue, trouble yourself to straighten things out, she'en l'shabsha mikoch kushya, and not to ruin the source that featured Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel just because of a kasha that we had. Ki borur li shekach omar Shmuel. It's clear that this is what Shmuel had said. Kemo edus chizki abiyekish shelohoya loshon dvarav miyushav umetartzinon le besamuch. This reference to Chizkiah Aviekish is a reference to a very long piece of Gemara that you can see if you have Lamed Ches Omed Aleph in front of you in our Gemara markings. There's a very long bracketed section. The whole reason for this bracketed section is to simply show that there are areas of or sources that appear very difficult to understand at first glance, but with a great deal of effort we can resolve and explain that. And it seems from this Gemara that the classic example of toiling on resolving, on figuring out a vague source is this incident involving Chizkiah Aviekish. It deals with a topic totally unrelated to anything we have been speaking about, but it does illustrate how much effort must be expended in order to resolve and make sense of a particular source. And it's using that analogy that the Gemara here said that regarding our discussion, regarding the Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, seemingly have said the same thing, especially in light of the source that mentioned the mo'or, the hole between two rooms, and we have to toil in order to finally make sense of things and show that though Mikdach Godol and Sel Nironis may be one and the same, but that's not what Beis Shammai was referring to when he said Melo Mikdach, because the Melo Mikdach of Beis Shammai was not just the hole itself, but the hole plus a little surrounding area, making it larger than that which Beis Hillel said. But all of this discussion required a great deal of working out and toiling till we got to the conclusion. And
This idea, as we mentioned, is illustrated in the upcoming Gemara that we'll see in the brackets. However, we must point out that as far as this issue concerning Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel seemingly have said the same thing, Rav Papa also deals with that issue. This will, Mirtz Hashem, be featured in our next shiur. But with that, we conclude our shiur for today.